High-stakes negotiations on climate change are underway, with delegates from nearly 200 countries meeting in Bonn, Germany, there to resume negotiations on a new global agreement to cut greenhouse gas emissions. It's part of the run-up to a major summit in Paris later this year, and a key element, a very noticeable element of the gathering, is groups. The countries negotiate in groups, some of which are a little puzzling. In Paris, Nell Greenfield-Boyce has put together this handy field guide.
When the United Nations get together to duke it out over climate change, diplomats typically sit behind little placards that show the name of their home country. But when these people speak, they're often representing not just their own country, but a group.
Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, Nauru has the honor to speak on behalf of the Alliance of Small Island States.
Excellencies, Sir Presidente, I have the honor to speak on behalf of the Environmental Integrity Group.
Speaking for a group is always an honor.
I have the honor to speak on behalf of the Least Developed Countries Group, which represents the 48 poorest countries in the world.
And there are a lot of different groups to speak for.
At last count, I believe there are now 14 groups.
Elliot Derringer is with the nonprofit Center for Climate and Energy Solutions.
It might take you back to junior high school and cliques, which can be very powerful forces, actually.
Junior high had the popular kids, the jocks, the nerds, the outcasts. Similar kids sort of gravitate towards each other. It's the same in climate change negotiations. By the end of this year, the UN hopes to have forged a new global agreement that will affect everything, from energy production to agriculture to transportation. We're talking the future of the planet here. Derringer says it makes sense for countries with shared interests to negotiate in packs.
Members of groups coordinate their positions because there's strength in numbers. They also serve as a bit of a support system, particularly for smaller countries.
Derringer has been watching UN climate negotiations for 2 decades. He says in the early days, there were just a few groups. For example, the European Union has always negotiated as one bloc.
You then saw the emergence of the umbrella group, which is basically the developed countries that are not within the European Union, the United States, Japan, Canada, Russia, Australia, and a few others.
Thank you very much. Mr. President, on behalf of the umbrella group of countries...
The umbrella group. Where did that name come from? No one could tell me. But one diplomat jokingly told me it was because an umbrella is a good hiding place.
These are guys who wanted to do as little as possible. And so they found a shade for themselves. Canada's got its oil from tar sands, you know. Where better do you go? You go to the umbrella group to hide.
That's Ambassador Nozipho Mokato-Diseko from South Africa. But she says now that the U.S. has started talking big on climate change action...
I think there's a curiosity as to what's going to happen to the umbrella group.
Diseko is spokesperson for another group, the largest one in the negotiations. It's called the Group of 77 plus China. You might think it has 77 countries plus China. You would be wrong.
It's 134 in all, 134.
The name is left over from when this huge group first formed. Its members are developing countries. There's everybody from Afghanistan to Botswana to Vietnam.
Countries that come to this process with an understanding of what climate change is, because they feel the impact most immediately and have been feeling the impact for quite a while now.
But that doesn't mean everybody in that group sees things exactly the same way.
The most significant change we've seen in groups over the years is the emergence of smaller groups of developing countries.
Derringer says, think about it. If you're a tiny island state and feel that your very existence is threatened by melting ice and rising seas...
At a certain point, you realize that your interests may not be the same as those of a major emitting country like China or India.
It's now common for a member of the Group of 77 to also belong to another group, like maybe the Coalition for Rainforest Nations, or the Mountainous Landlocked Developing Countries, or this one.
I take the floor on behalf of the like-minded developing countries.
What are they like-minded about? This group includes Saudi Arabia, Bolivia, Venezuela. Derringer says they're seen as the hardliners.
They, generally speaking, hew very closely to the traditional developing country view that there should be very stark differentiation between the obligations of developed and developing countries.
Meanwhile, other developing nations say they'll take action on their own without waiting around for richer countries. Some of them formed a group called the Independent Association of Latin America and the Caribbean.
So you've seen, to some degree, a splintering of the developing countries. And on the whole, I actually think that's healthy. Because if everyone sticks to group positions and feels constrained by those group positions, it can be hard to make progress.
And then there's the group that was founded by Switzerland. Franz Perret is Switzerland's chief climate change negotiator. He says about 15 years ago, famously neutral Switzerland wasn't part of any group. That became a problem when at one point in the climate talks, the leaders of key groups went to a private room to negotiate. Perret says his predecessor tried to join the discussion,
but was escorted out of the room by security because he was not representing a group.
The very next day, Switzerland announced it was forming its own group.
And that any country who doesn't have a home is welcome to join that group.
Switzerland ended up banding together with Mexico, South Korea, Liechtenstein, and Monaco. This unlikely team is called the Environmental Integrity Group. Roberto Dondish is Mexico's lead climate change negotiator. He says their group is really influential because its members are so different from each other and cross so many divides. Both developed and developing countries seem to think, well, if those guys can agree on something, maybe we should take a look.
You know, if we can get Mexico and Switzerland and Korea to share the same points, you have a pretty good shot that that document could be adopted by almost everybody in the room.
And that is the ultimate goal here, to get a plan forward on battling climate change that virtually every nation in the world can sign on to. For that to happen, all of these different groups will have to somehow come together and turn into one. Nell Greenfield Boyce, NPR News.